I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Hey there, wrestling fans, it is I, CM Jew, the best Jew in the world, here with a brand new episode of CM Jew's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, CM Jew, and this is episode 66. Oh, that means we're only three away from that magical number, aren't we? You know the number. Jokes will be said. But right here on episode 66, we are continuing WrestleMania month with a look at what is considered by many to be one of the worst WrestleManias of all time in WrestleMania 13. Is it the worst? Is there really anything worth watching with this WrestleMania? I mean, well, we'll find out because we have that. We have our Raw flashback to March 16th, as the Rude, excuse me, March 9th, I believe. I could be wrong. Either way, it's the kickoff to the second episode of Raw from March, as we continue down the road to WrestleMania for our 1998 Raw flashback series. And many, many more. So sit back, relax, unleash a cold one. I know you celebrated on 316 day like I did. Or should I say on 316-16. And you threw that middle finger up in the air and you said, "Oh, hell yeah." Because, oh, here we go. Dun, dun, dun. Yes, I just fused Stone Cold with Keenan and Cal. You either are giving me a medal or you're coming at me with pitchforks and torches. But I digress. Unfortunately, we don't have much news items to talk about. One, there does seem to be something going on with Daniel Bryant. Though reports say that it's not due to any bad blood with the company. And that it might be depression, which was actually my first thought process, like, oh my god, he's getting depressed. And hopefully he has a great supportive group around him. I know I send my well wishes out to the American Dragon. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's depression again, and you can see it in his eyes, and I kind of hate to compare this also to what another story we're going to talk about in just a second, Hulk Hogan. But it is the same thing they talk about with Hogan and with Daniel Bryan, with Roddy Piper, with Flair, with Angle. They all have the sickness, as Roddy Piper put it, which is, it's not so much about quitting wrestling. It's that you're such a part of wrestling that you are And wrestling is a part of you. You can't just quit that. So, it would be understandable to see him having a hard time, even though they're just basically sending him around on basically this Daniel Bryan World Appreciation Tour. I think something that would be good for him is if he could be at least a semi-regular coach down at the Performance Center, because Lord knows there's a lot he could teach, especially some of the young kids who are just getting into the business. Now, I kind of mentioned the sort of other big, huge thing that happened. It actually happened. Did it happen last Thursday? Or over the weekend, and I can't remember. But yeah, Hulk Hogan dropped a big leg drop on Gawker and won his case, which. For those who haven't been following the case or not really care, I understand. But at the same point, you know, I care. I'm a Hogan fan. But more importantly, it's a huge victory for privacy. You know, especially if in this country we're going to start valuing privacy again, it is a big win to sit there and say that companies like Gawker, dirty, disgusting companies like them, cannot hide behind the idea of freedom of speech to invade people's privacies and basically blackmail him, which is what Gawker did. And it was really fun to watch them make asses of themselves in the trial. Like, ugh, we don't have to give a damn about this trial. We have freedom of speech. And the jury, like, you think so? Pay the motherfucker $150 million. And I wish I could have been in the courtroom to watch the look on Gawker's face. It's like, ha, gotcha. P-Life, motherfucker. Yes, obviously I'm a fan of Hulk Hogan, and I've gotten to multiple arguments with multiple friends of mine about, why do I still like Hulk Hogan? Haven't I heard all the stories about Hulk Hogan? Again, I go back to the idea of the sickness, and Hogan essentially pretty much confirmed it during his testimony in the trial of basically how hard it is for him to go out of character. And I do combine this with what's happening with Daniel Bryan, and like I said, for those same reasons. And I think as fans, we need to understand the sacrifices that the wrestlers do to entertain us. It is more than just a, you know, oh, they put on a mask and they have a gimmick and ooh. The real successful wrestlers, the wrestlers we care about, the wrestlers we wait in line and for hours just through stormy weather just to buy a ticket, to be in nosebleed seats, to watch them, those wrestlers, they have to fully engage and be a part of their character. And sometimes they can never really leave that character. It's the ultimate form of character acting. And we need to understand that for them to basically go back to being themselves becomes such a seismic shift for these wrestlers. I think something that would be, I think, very important for the WWE to invest in the future is a lot, some more psychological sort of healthcare, or more importantly, like, for long-time wrestling employees that have to retire, or when they decide to retire from wrestling, to help give them some psychological help to sort of wean them out of that character and wean them out of business, but to bring them basically down to, like, let's bring you back to reality. And I do think, you know, today's wrestlers have an understanding of that more than sort of the older wrestlers, and that's why it was really hard for older wrestlers, and it's why a lot of them still wrestle, even to, like, their 80s now, it seems. But it still doesn't change the fact that it's such a hard thing for wrestlers to go through. So, I think when Hogan says a curse word, part of it is he's in character. And he really has no concept of really what he's saying, or for that matter, when he makes excuses to why he said it. He's, again, in character. So, right now I hear Hairball, like, slamming on his sword, like, for other things he wants to argue with me about, because, Hairball, I did see your comment on Facebook. I say I'll just politely disagree with you. And leave it at that. So those are sort of the big things. Countdown to WrestleMania. It's really hard for me to focus on anything other than wrestling right now. As testament, probably the bad grade I got on one of my tests. It's so hard, and it's made even harder by the fact that it's not even so much the countdown to WrestleMania. It's the countdown to TakeOver Dallas. And goddamn fucking Nakamura versus Zayn. Oh, I can't take it anymore. It's a week away and I can't wait. I need next Friday to be now. I need it now. I need my fix. I need it. I need it so I can concentrate on schoolwork again. Ugh. Oh, it's so hard. I don't know if I'm gonna make it to next week. Oh, at this rate. Oh. Oh. Well, I'm gonna go get another fix of soda. What did you think I was gonna get a fix of? Dirty, dirty person. Well, why do that? Let's set us up, because it is time to continue our series of reviewing every Raw from 1998 as we look at the second Raw of March 1998. Take it on the road. Welcome back, and we are covering the second Raw of March for 1998. And after the big Raw that was last week, to where you had Tyson joining D-Generation X, and you had Undertaker coming back, you had also Austin being jumped by DX, so there was a lot of things going around. Again, a lot of storyline focus, so the wrestling wasn't a big deal. There were some interesting matches. Owen Hart had a... I'm trying to remember who he actually faced now. I honestly can't remember. I just knew that China gets involved in... it's Barry Windham. That's right. Oh, and it was a nice match. Obviously... Nice match, is sort of a contradictory because I couldn't remember who it was, but I completely just blanked on who it was. That's all it really was. It was a decent match, again, but the storyline here was Triple H on commentary, who was hilarious, and China, who cost him the match. The other sort of storyline match that was going on was you had Mero versus Goldust, where Luna and Sable were supposed to be handcuffed. Now, Goldust gets himself disqualified, basically, but so that he can steal... This is after he's knocked out Mero. And uses the handcuff to unlock Luna, and they sort of jump Sable, who's locked to the ring post, to give her a makeover, where they smear makeup all over her face. Honestly, she looked good. I say that because, again, I keep hearing about how the Sable storyline was this big ratings booster that WCW was afraid of, and I'm looking like, why? Look, I get it. She has a great set of tits. But I'm bored with the segments, honestly. Look, here's... what do they know? Yeah, horny 13-year-olds are desperate. But us, you know, maybe more adult men, it's like, she's beautiful, she's gorgeous. Yeah, I can see why I would fantasize about her. But where's my wrestling? That's what I'm at. Maybe, you know, maybe 30 years, or not 30 years, but see, it's almost 20 years now of being able to sit back and having adulthood happen, put things in perspective, possibly. But that act leads to, you know, a challenge by Goldust and Luna to set up the tag team, the intergender tag team match that would happen at WrestleMania. Of course, there was a tag match where Farouk and The Rock faced Steve Blackman and Ken Shamrock. That was decent. Again, you had a lot more storyline here to where, you know, the Nation of Domination is beating up on Shamrock, but then Rock, like, throws him, gets him, like, he's mine, I want him all alone. And so Farouk's like, okay. And the Domination's leading him away, and as Rock is, like, being a dick and pounding on Shamrock, Shamrock counters and gets the upper hand. But when he calls for help, Farouk's like, no, 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 no. That motherfucker said he didn't want our help. So we are going to the back. Y'all motherfuckers ain't helping him. He said he didn't want no help. We ain't gonna give him no help. Maybe, again, it's this older set for me, but I find myself loving Farouk in this. It's like, why didn't... Like, they could have used it to do such a good yield face turn, and they never did. And I would say the same thing about Mero, because outside of his dickishness, Mero was standing up for Sable, and Sable, like, just, like, slaps him, like, you did nothing. It's like, did you see that the motherfucker was knocked out? Again, maybe this is old age talking. Because I'm an old man. I'm an old man, but I still got the genetic grapefruit. Anyways. Those matches, and really there's nothing special. Really there's two big story elements that hit her. One was Stone Cold coming out, holding the show hostage, and running down Vince McMahon, demanding he comes in the ring. Finally, he gets Vince in the ring, runs him down, ruins his shirt, or should say, ruins his sports jacket and everything. And it's like, it's just that, it's that taste, that sweet little just taste, that preview of what's to come. And it's, oh, so sweet. The other thing that was happening, which reminds me, there was a really great cruiserweight match between Agua, which I kept saying, I think I was thinking that was Juventud Guerrero. I was wrong. It was S.A. Rios, so I apologize for that. Who would face Tanaka at WrestleMania? But Agua versus I'm trying to remember who. I think it was Panther or Brian Christopher. One of the two. Actually, it was Brian Christopher, excuse me. And King was in his corner. Tanaka was in Agua's corner. And that was a really, really fun match. I don't think the light heavyweights get enough respect for how good they were. Were they as good as the cruiserweights in WCW? Absolutely not. That was a much deeper and richer division, and I'm not saying that. But at the same time, there was some really good wrestling happening in those matches that doesn't get enough credit, I feel. And definitely, that was actually my match of the night. And a lot of that actually had to do with the other storyline, which was the Mind Games by Taker. Now, nobody actually ever talks about this when they talk about the storyline between Kane and Undertaker. What the sort of mind games played on this Raw. But and I didn't even know about this. So there I am watching the Raw on the network, and all of a sudden, it sort of goes, like the tape was messed up. And I'm like, oh, I guess the only tape of this got messed up. Man, that sucks. Didn't even faze me that it was not, or at least at first, it didn't even faze me that this was a mind game or like, hey, stupid, it's goddamn digital. I guarantee you they had a clean tape of the program. It's not the network. I mean, literally, at first I thought it was the network. And I slowly came to realize, wait a minute. I wonder if this was something by The Undertaker. And then it happened again. And I'm like, this is The Undertaker, isn't it? But at the same time, it was so... It's so simple of a trick, but it worked so well. I mean, literally, I was scared throughout the program with the lights constantly going in and out and everything. And it made a crow. Especially when King is in the locker room to interview Kane and Paul Bearer. And the seats keep popping up. And mind you, obviously, like there's underneath there's Munich devices blowing air that's causing them to pop up. It's a classic trick, but you can't see it. And it's like, hey, I'm going to stand over here and do the interview. And then they all start like going off one after another, like constantly. It's like, I'm out of here. And it's like, it really did a great job. Honestly, I felt scared watching the program. And thank God. Thank God. Yeah, they did. I think Kane and Taker happened when it did. That was scary as well, and that sort of stopped it. And I do love the end of Shawn Michaels saying, I'm not there, and then turning up to be there to jump Austin. I thought that was really good. Overall, I actually found it to be a very enjoyable Raw. Some solid matches, none to really talk that bigly about, but really solid good matches. A good match from the light heavyweights. Good matches from other wrestlers. And all the matches told great stories, and everything is building towards WrestleMania. And that's the sense I get here, is everything is building towards WrestleMania. So, I really do look forward to the next Monday Night Raw. Because Austin's due to get him some. And I can't wait for him to get himself some. Well, with that, that is our look back at the second Raw of March 1998. And with that, it's time to give us our rundown for WrestleMania 13, which took place on March 23rd, 1997, of an attendance of 18,197 at the Rosemont Horizon Center in Rosemont, Illinois, a.k.a. Chicago. Your commentary teams consist of Jerry the King Lawler, Jim Ross, and Vincent Kennedy McMahon. Ladies and gentlemen, this is WrestleMania 13. Welcome back, and it's time to get into our review of WrestleMania 13. though, before we get into it, there are a couple of things that we kind of need to talk about. In regards to, I think, why this WrestleMania is considered one of the worst of all time. That should give you a hint to some of the things I may say about the review, because honestly, I was very surprised by some of the wrestling, but we'll get to that. The first thing is something that we talked about last episode when we reviewed WrestleMania 7, when I talked about scale. And once again, we have another example here. WrestleMania 12, the WrestleMania before, happened in Anaheim at the Anaheim Pond, which is a bigger arena, or at least it looks like a big arena, and that's the thing here, that the Rosemont Verizon is a wonderful place. I mean, it's a legendary stadium. I don't believe it's actually up anymore. Could be wrong. Now, somebody let me know. But my point here is that coming from the Anaheim Palm, which is a newer, modern, bigger arena to the old Rosemont Horizon, it, with all due respect to the Rosemont Horizon, again, was a downscale. And again, it's that pageantry. It's the... scale is not just the stadium size. Scale is the... You know, again, when we think of... we hear it all the time. It's WrestleMania, the pageantry, the showmanship, the excitement. Well, in watching this entire WrestleMania, where was that? None of that was there. There's no pyrotechnics. There's no, or at least not till the end. I mean, the theatrics. Like, again, the last match had them. Austin's entrance had him, but there really didn't seem to be any theatrics. Or at least a lot of them. Though, I do want to say this. For that time period, I actually kind of liked the entrance way just a little bit. That sort of tunnel where you could see him coming out and everything. But still, I don't think it was used to its full advantage. And so, in watching this WrestleMania, there was a complete lack of theatrics. A lack of showmanship, a lack of celebrities. I mean, hell, they kept the camera on Owen, on Stu Hart and his wife, like during the Owen Hart and Bret Hart match. It's like, that's not a celebrity, guys. I have respect for them, but they're not celebrities. actually, it made me hate Bret Hart more and Owen. While their matches. And so, you have that loss of scale that I think really hurts this viewing of WrestleMania. It also does not help, I think, again, who's who. Like, we know, I mean, the interesting thing is, like, you look at this WrestleMania, you have The Rock, you have Triple H, you have Stone Cold Steve Austin, the three of the biggest names in WWE history. You have The Undertaker. You have... it's just... It should sound bigger, or at least look bigger to, I think, us in the past, knowing who they are. But again, their characters weren't quite there, with the exception of Stone Cold. But yeah, this was Rocky Maivia. This was Green Rocky. This was Triple H, on that verge of that breakthrough, but still that early gimmick. You know, and there's interesting things. You know, you have JBL here. You have Rikishi here. Rocky faces a wrestler called the Sultan, which was one of Rikishi's gimmicks during his early WWE run. For those who don't know, he came to WWE. He was part of the Head Shrinkers. And after that, then he had that sort of guy who got out of the hood type of gimmick and then became the Sultan, where he's being managed by... and again, here's the example. We'll get to that with the match when we'll talk about wrestling match, but the Sultan had the Iron Sheik and Bob Backlund as his manager. You know, Rocky has a famous dad. His dad does not come to the ring until after the match when he's getting beat up. Why was his dad and Tony Atlas, who was in the crowd, why were they not accompanying him to the ring again, that would have added to the showmanship. So it's little things like that. I think a big reason why this WrestleMania gets looked down upon is there is a complete lack of showmanship and theatrics and pageantry in a smaller venue. I don't know about the build-up, but from what I read, they actually had to give like the last 1,500 tickets away because they couldn't just fill up the stadium because they could only sell 16,000 instead of the 18,000 that the arena filled. So, in that sense, obviously people weren't excited for this WrestleMania. So, yeah, you have that loss of scale. I'm trying to bring up WrestleMania 12 because I want to see what the attendance was. The attendance was actually about the same. So it had about the same size. But again, you go back to that sense of it's the more modern arena. It had a more modern design that gave it a more open look. You know, those are things you have to take into account about the visuals of the WrestleMania. How, you know, obviously they're not thinking in 1997, how is this going to look in 2016? But still, as compared to the visuals and the showmanship for those who remember WrestleMania 12, again, I've actually never seen WrestleMania 12. I've seen clips. I've seen Shawn Michaels' entrance. I know he wins the Iron Man match. I've seen bits of the backlot brawl. But again, that was a unique match that just added to the pageantry. So you have all those things going for you. So, ultimately, I'm saying this because we're going to get some interesting views of mine on the wrestling for this WrestleMania in just a second. But I just want to get that out of the way before I get to the wrestling. So, with that being said, let's get to our first match. Again, we do have a dark match we can talk about. Well, not talk about, but to mention. Billy Gunn defeated Flash Funk with the Funkettes in a singles match. It was a free-for-all match, apparently. It does not tell me how Billy Gunn won. I'm just guessing Billy Gunn, Flash Funk. Which, again, a wrestler that should have gotten more in WWE. Vince, this is why people don't trust you. It's Flash Funk. He should have been bigger. Anyways. So our first match is, oddly, what is it about WrestleManias and events like Wrestle Kingdom that they have to open the card with four-way tag team matches? Why? 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 I'm just asking why. Anyways, the opening match is the four-way tag team elimination match to determine the number one contender to face whoever the WWF tag team champions were going to be on Raw. And you had the Headbangers of Mosh and Thrash making their WrestleMania debut versus the new Blackjacks of Blackjack Windham, Blackjack Bradshaw making their debut versus the Godwins, Henry O. Godwin and Phineas I. Godwin with Hillbilly Jim and Doug Furness and Phil LaFon. I did feel it was actually a pretty decent opener. Not I don't want to call it good, but it wasn't horrible. It was very enjoyable. You had sort of classic tag team wrestling here. I think sort of the issue here and sort of why the crowd was a little bit dead for it is, in particular for two of them, they don't know how to react. I also think storyline-wise, having the Blackjacks and Furnace and LaFon, I mean, I understand it for storyline, but at WrestleMania, just getting disqualified to go to the back to leave it to the Headbangers and Godwins, I don't think set up the match or at least took a lot of drama away from the match. And I think drama is what is needed when you have new faces in there and you're trying to get the crowd behind them, as we'll see with a later match, to really, you know, get people to either boo or cheer for guys. It's like, oh, they got disqualified. They're in the back. It made it seem like the Blackjacks didn't care about winning. So, decent opener. It's okay. Then, our next match is for the WWF Intercontinental Champion, as the champion, Rocky Maivia, faces the Sultan, a.k.a. Mr. Too Cool himself, Rikishi. Get down. With his managers, Bob Backlund and the Iron Sheik. Rocky's very green. And I mean green. I mean, the Sultan, which is, it's now that, especially that I know who it is, I was like, who, you know who I initially thought it was before I looked it up? I thought it was Umaga. That was Rosie, right? Yeah, that was. Was it Rosie or Jamal? I think it was Rosie. No, it was Jamal. I only got 3 minutes. Oh, fuck. Did I say 3 minutes? While they banged down my door, let me finish this review. But I initially thought it was Umaga, basically. Like, very early in his career. But it was Rikishi. I'm just waiting for 3 minutes, like, bust through my wall like the Kool-Aid man. But he was very good in this match. He was agile. He had a lot of strength. You know, it was I think that was a gimmick that could have worked if it was done right. Again, I would have to look further into it. But, and it's probably because it was too cartoony. I mean, we can say, like, why didn't go with it? But, like, at the same time, if they did, you probably would have never gotten Rikishi with Too Cool. Anyways, though, he was very good in the match. The Sultan, a.k.a. Rikishi, carried this match. You know, he made Rock look better than he was when he entered the match, but it was very obvious in this match how green Rocky was. And again, as I mentioned before, the lack of showmanship, where it would probably have been better if maybe Rocky's dad and Tony Atlas were actually at his side instead of, you know, Tony Atlas sitting next to Lou Albano in the front crowd. By the way, that was their celebrities, by the way. Tony Atlas and Lou Albano. Okay, I just want to clarify that. Though I will give this credit. When Stone Cold throws Bret Hart over the railing right there, Lou Albano immediately goes something like, "Everybody get back!" as he's there to help. But yeah, it's like, and that's a nice moment of Rock and Rocky's dad side by side. But it's like, there could have been more to that. It could have made me care about his character more, but no, we had to just throw Rocky to the Rocky to the wolves, so that he could hear "Die, Rocky, die," because fate. Now the next match, though, I really enjoyed the next match, and I think. There are two matches that are extremely underrated. And no, they're not Bret Hart. One of them is not Bret Hart versus Stone Cold. One of them is this match, as Hunter Hearst Helmsley, with his fine China, faces off against Goldust. And, goddamn Marlena. Excuse me, I have to take a break for a second. I had to cool myself down there. This, what I felt this was a really good match. They told a really great story in the match. I mean, not better than the psychology and the story told in the Stone Cold Bret Hart match, as we'll get to. But still, there was some really good psychology and really good wrestling storytelling in the match. And then, of course, it's ruling outside of China. And, you know, her trying to intimidate Marlena and, like, I'm going to get a hold of you. And that ultimate setup for the end that leads to Marlena, Goldust accidentally being thrown into Marlena, which pushes her into the arms. And just that savage bear hug of China on Marlena. It's like, you really felt for her. You really felt she was in danger of being injured. And of course, that also leading to Triple H getting the roll up in the cheap win. But this is a cheap win in a good way, in the sense of he's a heel. And it added to that heel heat. It's like he made you hate Hunter Hearst Helmsley. You know, I wonder whatever happened to that guy. Something tells me he looks like currently a champion somewhere. It certainly wasn't in WCW. No, but I thought this was a really, really solid match. I really, really enjoyed it. I think it's one of the... certainly, people should watch this, I think, pay-per-view for that match. It's a really solid match. It's, you know, joking aside, it's Triple H early in his career. And the thing here, unlike with The Rock... and again, this is why I say how green The Rock was. I didn't see... I mean, there was the DDT. That's something he would use later as well. But really, you didn't see much of the elements. Like, he does have great charisma, but still, it was those character elements that were missing that you didn't see. Here, you saw a lot of the character elements that Triple H would continue to use throughout his career that made him such a great character throughout. Our next match was for the WWF Tag Team Champions, as the tag champions of Owen Hart and the British Bulldog faced Mankind and Vader with Paul Bearer. This was a solid match. Vader looked devastating. I mean, just a dominating force, and looked wonderful. It's like, damn, Vader looked good. And Mankind was good as well. I mean, Mick Foley, I don't think, is very underrated in his wrestling style. And, of course, you had Owen Hart and the British Bulldog. And it was a solid match. And the problem with the match is that, one, it goes too long. And it had too many fake, like, oh, here's where the comeback for Owen and British Bulldog starts. And not that there shouldn't be those false starts, but it's like they did it over and over and over and over and over again, and there were just too many of them. It's like, just do that like two or three times, just to show the complete domination of Vader and Mankind, and then go home. And which ultimately also led to the fact that I thought the match was too long. At 16 minutes and 8 seconds, I think the match would have been better suited. Hell, even if you just took 3 minutes off. And with that being said, I did not buy the double count out. The match ends with a double count out where Mankind has the mandible claw in British Bulldog on the outside and won't let it go, and ultimately to get counted out. And it's like, I just felt for such a great match, that was a cheap way to end it. It's like, if you didn't want to pull the titles off them, again, you should have been just like, he had it, and then done in the ring, if Bulldog powers out, lifts him as he has the mandible claw, hits the power slam, and gets the 1-2-3, that would have been better and more powerful. It would have given them some momentum, while at the same time, Mankind would have still looked strong, because basically, the only way to get out of his mandible claw was to power slam it way out. So, I don't know if that's the perfect way to go, but I definitely think there were better ways to do it than the way they went. That takes us to what is, let's make no bones about it, match of the goddamn night. Bret Hart versus Stone Cold Steve Austin in a submission match with Ken Shamrock as a special guest referee. I could watch this match over and over and over and over and over and over again. And the wrestling's fine. It is a lot of brawling, but really what makes this match great isn't necessarily the wrestling, though the wrestling is great. It's the psychology, the ring psychology, the storytelling, and the way they do the double turn at the end where you turn Austin face and Bret heel, which continued towards a later match, but that doesn't work so well. As far as Bret Hart is concerned, I would say, but still. Just the psychology around in the back, in the forth, the way Austin worked on body parts, the way Bret Hart worked on body parts, the way Austin sold some of the injuries. And the thing is, like, when he stopped selling the injuries, he made it feel like, oh, well, he's been injured and he's been wobbling around, but now he's gotten some momentum and adrenaline, and now he's fighting through that pain, so he's not wobbling anymore. And there was this great psychology. The way they start the match, the way it goes into the crowd and up the stairs and everything, and it just, like, this was a fight, and it's like, get him! And it's like, you forget you're watching a scripted story. You get drawn into the fight, and ultimately, that's what makes this match so good. Added on to the psychology, the ring psychology, the storyline telling, the great wrestling, the back and forth, is that it draws you in. And that is why, ultimately, the double turn after the match works so well. You're drawn into Stone Cold's guts and determination, and the fact that he would not tap out. I'm going to pass out. I may lose because I pass out, but I damn sure ain't tapping out. Oh, hell yeah. There's a reason this is considered one of the greatest matches of all time. In finally getting to see this for the first time, I understand why now. I mean, I have seen it. But I didn't get the chance to really sort of, like, build up to it as far as waiting for it to come up in the card and everything. So this, it has been a sort of second. I can't tell you how many times actually I've watched it. I think it's either the second or third time I've seen it. I think one of the times being a WrestleMania Rewind or something like that. I don't know if there's a WrestleMania Rewind, though, of it. It could be wrong, but either way, this match deserves its status as one of the best matches of all time. We move to one of the best matches of all time to what is definitely the worst match of the card. Even with Green Rocky, there's something there, and Sultan's good as wrestling, and the tag team opening match was back and forth. Both of them were. This street fight just, it felt clunky. It felt there was no story to it. It fell all over the place. It was mayhem. And I understand maybe the job was it was mayhem, but it didn't work. By the way, the match I'm talking about is the Legion of Doom of Hawk and Animal team with Ahmed Johnson. Of course, Legion of Doom being Chicago favorites to face the Nation of Domination, which at this point was Farouk, Crush, and Savio Vega, with their rap group of Wolf DJ, or Wolf D, J.C. Ice, Mr. D'Lo Brown, and Clarence Mason. Which, by the way, it was interesting to see Mr. Lowdown himself, D'Lo Brown, in a suit and tie and everything. It's like, wait, that D'Lo? That's D'Lo! But the problem with this match is that it's all over the place. Like, they use the fire extinguisher. The fire extinguisher is a one-time spot. I think we can all agree with this. Unless it's built up to again. The thing is here, they're just using whatever they can get their hands on. So there's no build up to it happening again and the chaos it concerns. And it's like, there's no build up. The problem is there's no build up. There's no, like, story-driven reason to why they're using which weapons or why what happened happens. It just happens. And it just felt clunky and a mess, and it could have been great. It had the potential there. But it just felt clunky. And the thing is, there's some good wrestlers in here. There's Farouk. There's Hawking Animal. But again, there was just no direction to the match. And it just felt horrible. That brings us to our last match. As we have a no disqualification match for the WWF World Championship. As the champion, Psycho Sid, defends against The Undertaker. Remember when I made mention earlier, right as we got to the Triple H Goldust match, I said there were two matches on the card that were extremely underrated, or I felt were two of the most underrated matches in WrestleMania. And I said, one of those, by the way, wasn't Bret Hart and Stone Cold. Yeah, this is the other one. Yeah, you heard me right. Now, I've seen the reviews, other people like, it's boring, and all that jazz. To which I would ask, what match were you watching? Were you actually paying attention? Maybe you were bored out and, like, taken off by the street fight, which I get. I really do. But if you were actually watching this match, this was a beautifully done match as far as storyline and psychology. And the fact that Psycho Sid dominates it through his psychology by going to the top constantly, doing power moves to drive down the Undertaker. Undertaker getting back and up, being the Undertaker, sort of back and forth the way they go. There was great psychology to this match. The problem in the match, though, lies with its ending. Now, before the match actually gets started, by the way, great pageantry with The Undertaker, with Psycho Sid, with the music and the Psycho sign, that was great. You know what, I think Sid Vicious does not get enough respect to how good he can be when he wants to be. And this was him being as good as he could be when he wanted to be good this night, and he was. But Bret Hart comes out, and he does the promo where he cuts down Vince, cuts down Undertaker, cuts down Sid. Sid had enough of his shit, and threw him out the ring. It's like, stay down. And as for you, and then Undertaker, and the match starts. And so I like that. The problem is, with Bret Hart comes in later, and is like, fumbling around, beats up on Sid with a chair. Undertaker, who is just getting back up, is able to counter before he gets with the throws him out and all this mess. The problem is, there's also all these people trying to stop him. Okay. The point of a run-in is that not in the case that the referee can't see it because this is a no disqualification match. But it can't be slow. A run-in has to be fast and hit hard. Like, you know, you come to the crown, slip in the ring, when he's not looking, hit him, and then bolt. This was, and I understand maybe part of it was that Bret Hart was like, I'm going to ruin this match and like take them both out. But that was the wrong thing to do, and it hurt the ending of it. It's like, not that it made Sid look weak, because Sid had made himself look completely strong throughout the match. The point was, you know, you have this moment where Undertaker overcomes, and you know, you can set up, you know, Bret Hart, like, saying, I helped you get that, by him coming in fast, hitting Sid Vicious really hard, that causes him to lose concentration for that one moment that allows Undertaker to pick him up, chokeslam, do a big move, that's hit him either with the tombstone or set him up by hitting the big power move that will set it up for the tombstone and give him the win. But it, that whole segment there of the match felt like a jumbled mess. And it hurt the match in the long run. Up until then, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic match. I thought there was great psychology shown by Sid Vicious. I thought there was great psychology by Undertaker, the way he kept getting back in, up, and you know, power moves, and it felt like a heavyweight fight. I actually really enjoyed it up until Bret Hart's interference. You know, it sounds like this, I wonder, why did everybody like Bret Hart? It's like, oh yeah, I have to go back and watch SummerSlam, because like, that's... or his match here with Stone Cold, because those are like the only two good matches of his that I've seen. So, of course, I say that saying that I've really not seen the entire WrestleMania 12 match. I may change my tune next year. So, yeah, really good, just jumbled mess. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on the matches. Time to go over our rundown. Top three moments. Number three, Rocky and his dad side by side. Because that's a great WrestleMania moment. Again, I think they could have done it better with Rocky being part of the entrance and everything. But, yeah. Number two, as far as any moment or move, China getting capturing Marlena and putting her in that savage bear hug. I mean, oh my God. And then I have a tie for number one. And I know this is cheating, but in this case, both moments are really wonderful. One was Stone Cold passing out. That whole moment, the end of that Stone Cold Bret Hart submission match. It's perfection. But the reason it's tied is because the other moment is Undertaker winning the championship. And that's sort of something I kind of failed to mention a second before when talking about their match. But again, this was Undertaker winning his second title, but sort of getting that declaration of like, now he is the man of the company. That's what this WrestleMania was all about, was his ascension. And again, that's another reason to sort of like, there really was no build up to that sort of ascension of him being, or at least it didn't feel like there was any build up or any excitement really about that final match. It's like, throughout the pay-per-view, they mentioned it sparingly, but it felt like there was no excitement for that final match. And sort of that hurts it as well. It's a shame because, like I said, it's why it's tied for number one with the Austin Hart finish, is Undertaker winning the title. I mean, really, it was a great moment. And that look where Undertaker on his knees holding up the title as the lightning in the darkness where the lightning is flashing everything. It's a great look. It really was. So that brings us to top three matches. Number three, I'd say Undertaker versus Sid Vicious. And the only reason it's number three, not number two, again, is because of Bret Hart's interference. Number two, Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Goldust. Again, I cannot stress how underrated I think that match is. It's a very solid wrestling match. I really think you should check it out. And obviously, number one, we all know what it was going to be. Bret Hart versus Stone Cold in the submission match. It's wrestling perfection. Now, I can't say that it's become one of my favorites of all time, because again, part of, I think, favorites of all time also has an emotional connection of sometimes you remember watching it. And I will say this, as great as the flaw for me of this match, and it has great wrestling, but it's not as great as other wrestling is. And that's probably a debate for another time. So, ultimately, WrestleMania 12 has a lot of solid and good matches that are brought down by the lack of pageantry, lack of showmanship, lack of theatrics, lack of build-up, lack of excitement. And that's a shame, because there are three solid gold star matches on this card, which is more than can be said for some other WrestleManias. So, I give, and I say gold star as far as wrestling, as opposed to, you know, other WrestleManias where it all feels like every match is just a brawl. So with that being said, I give WrestleMania 13 a 2.5 out of 5. I do think it's worth checking out. I think the three matches that were my favorites, Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus Goldust, Bret Hart versus Stone Cold in the submission match, and Undertaker versus Sid for the WWF Championship are all worth checking out. One, because all of them are good wrestling matches, and two, because each has a moment that's memorable, whether it be China getting a hold of Molina, whether it be Stone Cold refusing to tap out, or Undertaker finally winning the title. All of those are three great moments to go inside with good wrestling matches. And I think those make this WrestleMania worth checking out. I just wish there was more pageantry involved. So, that is it for this episode of CMJU. I hope you enjoyed it. I said it was going to be different. Do expect the next episode to come out in a couple days. As I had to push this one back again and again and again. So look forward to that by either the end of the weekend or early Monday morning. We'll get to what we're going to in a little bit. But remember, if you have any emails or comments or any kind, there's several ways to contact the show. You can email us at appsolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's appsolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also leave us a comment on the website, which you can find at www.an.132productions.com or on our Facebook page by searching for the Absolution Network. Of course, while you're at the Absolution Network website, check out all our other podcasts, my Tom's Prerogative Animation Podcast, Tom's Tsunami D&D, the Intergalactic Graphic Review. Of course, you have Shin Tiger Curl and his anime and wrestling videos, including Raw Reviews, and of course, John Romas and his Sentai videos. And of course, make sure you check out the sidebar with all our friends. Check out their work, of course, including our good friends Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast. So, that is it for this episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. Next episode, well, we're certainly going to go bigger in scale. We're going to go bigger in everything. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we return to the granddaddy of them all as we take a look at a WrestleMania that took place in a rocking stadium. And gave us moment after moment after moment, including one big shocking moment at the end. Ladies and gentlemen, next time we review WrestleMania 17. Oh, hell yeah. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CM Jew. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around all around, they bring me down to negative. But I believe, yes, I believe. I said I believe. gentlemen to feed one be brought down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. How the darkness comes light, twilight unto the heights. Crown lights burning up, or do the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. My love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be for holding and sealing. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs of love and healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legs and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them mother to live that fast life, but you're free.